This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a discussion of the impacts of the ongoing volcanic eruption on Hawaii Island. Catherine Cruz is off this week, and I'm joined in the studio by Conversation producer Ryan Finnerty.
And joining us by phone for today's program are Will Okabe, the managing director for the County of Hawaii, and Jessica Farrakhan of the National Park Service on the Big Island.
Before we begin our panel discussion, we asked Hawaii Island reporter Sherry Bracken to set the stage for us. She's been in Pahoa the last couple of days, and we spoke about an hour ago.
I've been here since yesterday, and, you know, the situation varies. I had the chance to talk with Will Okabe, with whom you'll be speaking today. Mm-hmm. He's the managing director of the county, and when the mayor is absent, which he has been because he's ill, although he is back today, Will is in charge. And one of the things I asked him about were the plans for short-term housing and long-term housing, because right now we have around 300 folks living in the Pahoa Community Center, and we have around 50 people in the Keaau Armory, and they're living on cots, and they have been for about 7 weeks now, and that is a very tough situation. Will said they're forming a task force about the housing situation, and you'll probably be asking him about that. But clearly, getting these people out of the community centers would be a very good thing, because I was sad. I talked to a few of them, and they're very grateful for the help the county's giving, but I just know how I would feel if I were living on a cot in a gym for 7 weeks.
Where can they go?
Well, there's the rub. You know, I asked the question about FEMA. In other disaster situations, FEMA has brought in essentially house trailers to put people in on a very temporary basis, and there are none of those here. FEMA folks with whom I spoke yesterday, because FEMA has a completely great disaster recovery center at Keaau High School, but when I asked the question about the trailers, they said logistically it's quite difficult because we're here on an island, as one says, in the middle of the Pacific, but that would be a short-term solution. Roy Takemoto with the mayor's office at last Tuesday's community meeting said they are working on a number of options. They want to give people choices. And that's really just the short term. But Will said he thinks the short term is not going to begin happening for several months. And I really am hoping, for the sake of the folks, that something can be done to get people out of that situation. By the way, one of the other situations they're dealing with, not at the Keaau Armory, which is a really lovely location up on top of the hill. Shipman Park is right there. The kids can get outside and play. But at the Pahoa Community Center, where they have around 300, Ranson Yoneta, who's with Park and Recreation and normally manages that facility, is now managing the temporary housing situation. And he said out of the 300 total, he's estimating that about 30% of those folks are people who have come in who are not displaced lava residents. They are people who have always been homeless and now are living in the community center. And the people who were displaced by lava are not houseless by choice. This was a very unexpected event for them, whereas the chronic homeless people have sort of a different zeitgeist about them. And he said that's an issue because the two groups aren't really that compatible with each other. So I'm hoping the county can come up with a situation. As you and I speak, Mayor Harry Kim, who is now back on the job, despite having 20% heart function and pneumonia, he is conducting a cabinet meeting, and I know this is one of the things they're talking about, because Will told me that was going to be high on the agenda, how to get people into a little bit better housing situation.
That would seem to be the number one problem, wouldn't it, Sherry, the human cost of all this?
Yeah, you know, and geologically, it's fascinating. Last night, the view of the fissure and the lava, which, by the way, you can see the fissure from several places on the island. When I was coming down Saddle Road yesterday morning, although it was daylight, so I couldn't see the orange, I could clearly see the plume. And I have friends in Mountain View and Waikeaouka, just a little bit up the hill, and you can see the fissure, and even at the Keaau transfer station as you're driving in. So it's pretty spectacular. And the lights in the night sky, it's really magical. And last night, friends and I went to Kaleo's restaurant in Pahoa, which, by the way, has fabulous food. it was jammed, and I was overhearing some of the conversations, and some of the people are, in fact, tourists who've come here, and they really want a way to see this lava. So another issue that will help tourism when it can be arranged is the county setting up a lava viewing area that is safe and not really in a danger zone, because people are going to come. I mean, last night after dinner, everybody was standing out there taking pictures with their cell phone. I mean, it's quite spectacular.
Well, you know, Sherry, that's what you point out, the dichotomy in this situation, that on one level you have a human emergency with people in a pretty dire situation, and then you have, you know, nature's beauty attracting tourists. That's one thing that we'll be wanting to talk about this morning.
Well, one last thing I want to mention is that FEMA has a setup at Ka'ahai. They're there every day right now from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they say even if you don't think you can qualify or you don't need services, you should come and register. They've already had 1,000 families register because they are the gateway to numerous services. And at Ka'ahai, they also have about 25 other county, state, and nonprofit agencies to give advice, guidance, and help. So I urge people who don't know that to check out FEMA at Ka'ahai, where they're also offering free medical care Friday and Saturday and next Monday through Thursday, courtesy of the Army Reserve. So thank you so much, Chris, for talking with me.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. We'll pass that along.
All right. Aloha. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was HPR's Hawaii Island reporter, Sherry Bracken, reporting from Pahoa on Hawaii Island. And I'm joined in our studio by conversation producer Ryan Finnerty.
And joining us from Hawaii Island over the phone are Will Okabe. He's the managing director for the County of Hawaii. That makes him number two to County Mayor Harry Kim. And also with us is Jessica Farrakhan from the National Park Service. She is the spokesperson for Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. And we should note that most of that park has been closed to the public for over a month now.
Welcome to you both. And today we're talking about Hawaii Island's recovery from volcanic activity. We're asking listeners to call in at 808-941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Island. And Will Okabe, if I may start with you, Sherry referred to a really massive relief effort that's underway. You see that every day, don't you?
Definitely. First of all, I'd like to say aloha to your listeners from Hawaii County. It's a very devastating thing that's happening on the Big Island. I want to let everyone know and also your listeners know that it affects 2% on this island. It's a small area compared to the size of the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
All the islands of the Hawaiian chain can fit on the Big Island.
That's right.
And we still have more space left over. So I just want to give the listeners an opportunity to understand the size of our island.
That's a good perspective, and that's why they call it the Big Island. Right?
Yeah, and it's with this lava flow, it's going to get even bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So, you know, we are looking at a task force, as Sherry has mentioned, with the leadership of the governor, the state, the federal government, along with the county and a lot of the churches. We are going to be developing a task force to look into this concern about transitional housing and also permanent housing, and trying to look at another location for these communities.
Well, that's a situation that's still in flux, isn't it, Will? It sounds that way anyway.
Yes. It's still in the we're trying to make sure that we have a comprehensive look and trying to not make people think that one size fits all. We want to look at every opportunity to bring relief to the people in the Puna area. Because you're talking about three subdivisions that have been destroyed, basically. Then also the Kapoho and also the vacation land area. Basically, it's gone. And Leilani, of course, where the fissure is. And we can look forward to giving the people an opportunity, some hope, as that the county will basically take the lead along with the state to try to ensure something will be done to bring some normalcy in their lives.
And I would think that a true normalcy in their lives would involve relocating to some sort of permanent housing, and that solution would have to be quite a ways away, I would think.
Well, we're working with the state. Governor Ige, as we've been working with him in regards to looking at some areas dealing our land. One of the concerns is about water, having water, electricity. So we have identified several properties, and that Senator Ruderman has been helping us in this county to try to identify some of these areas as well. So it takes a team effort. It's not just the county. We're working very diligently every day, 7 days a week, and trying to come to some kind of resolution.
Well, as you pointed out, Will, you do have some land area to work with, and that gives you somewhat of an advantage over other islands, I would think.
Yes, and one of the reasons why, you know, people would ask me, you know, people built these homes in the rift zone. So that's zone one or zone two. And the land is very much cheaper on the Big Island compared to any of the other islands in the state. So there always was a risk in regards to building homes in these areas because it was a rift zone. But from the volcano in Halemaumau all the way down to the ocean, this rift zone, lava is flowing continuously under, you know, under this rift. So, you know, I recently had a my wife's family had a property and a beach home for over 40 years, and that was destroyed in a matter of a couple of weeks ago. And also the mayor had another property, a beach home in a vacation land. So all of those properties and the home is all gone. So we always knew there was a possibility because there was an eruption in Kapoho in 1960 mm-hmm. that basically did the same thing to that particular community. But, you know, 1960 to now 2018, you know, that we were able to enjoy that property and that beach home. But we have to be very empathetic, and we've sympathized with the people that have built their homes, and they were their primary homes, and that these people are now displaced. We have a homeless situation that is basically the largest now in the state of Hawaii, and we need to address that. And I know Sherry mentioned about the homeless people who have moved into these shelters. We have accommodated them. We provide meals for all the people that are homeless, three meals a day. And we're not going to distinguish because everybody, excuse me, they're all homeless and they have needs. And if it's not, the government has to take the opportunity when people are in need to address it, because that's what government does. And whether it's the county, the state, or the federal government, when there is a need in the disaster, the people will look to government for help. And that's what we're doing.
Well, thanks very much, and we're going to return to that a little bit later in the program. I want to bring in Jessica Farrakhan of the National Park Service, because she's the spokesperson for the Volcanoes National Park on Hawaii Island. And Jessica, when in Sherry's report, she, you know, I refer to that dichotomy between a human disaster, you know, people displaced from their homes, and a spectacular natural event that's drawing people who want to see it. You must see that every day.
Yes, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, that is our middle name, basically Volcanoes. Right. And Kilauea right now is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's erupting. The human toll on this is certainly extreme, and we're very empathetic to our own friends and family and staff who are impacted by that. But
sure.
The park itself, you know, we hear, oh, most of the park is closed, but there's actually quite a bit now that visitors can do. Resiliency has been the name of the game with our park staff who mm-hmm. are continuing to serve the public by sharing Hawaiian culture, what's going on with the eruption. We've increased the days that the Kahuku unit of the park is open in Kau.
Mm-hmm.
And we are relaunching our After Dark in the Park programs. Of course, we're rebranding them After Dark near the park. Mm-hmm. But our park rangers are out in the community and interacting with the public. We mentioned, you know, the lava lake within Halemaumau has disappeared, but the aloha that we have for our community and for our visitors and for our island is really over the top.
Well, you referred to your mission, and in a way, this is an opportunity to do a great deal of informing of the public.
It is. It's an incredible opportunity to reach the public and have them come to us in these places where there's no admission charge, We're at the Mokopapa Discovery Center in downtown Hilo now 5 days a week. That's Tuesdays through Saturdays from 9 to 4. We're also up in Volcano Village again at the Volcano Art Center's Neolani campus. And we're there most days telling visitors what's going on with the eruption. And then, of course, our Kahuku unit. We were only open on the weekends before this cycle had started, but now we're open 5 days a week from Wednesdays through Sundays from 9 to 3. And, again, park rangers there to talk about what's going on with the eruption, showcase Hawaiian cultural crafts and things like that with absolutely no charge.
Well, Jessica, when you deal with the public and when you address the public, you know, people coming from far away, and inevitably you run into some of the misconceptions they might have brought with them about how what a volcano is and how it works. What are some of those that you encounter?
A lot of people, visitors, are confused as to why the park's closed. They have that vision of a cataclysmic, that triangular cone-shaped volcano, and it's spewing out of its top, a lot like what Fissure 8's doing. The situation at the summit, the part of the volcano that's in the national park, is quite different. It's a giant crater, and that has expanded now to twice its normal size, and of course, it's devoid of any lava whatsoever. The lava's gone. So the threat up at the summit and in the park is not lava. It's the continued incredible seismicity. We're talking over 11,000 earthquakes in the last month. I was just looking at the USGS site before this call, and just, wow, I mean, that's incredible. You know, our community, our friends, our staff who live in the Volcano Village area, there's a lot of sleepless nights up there because of the volcano's continued seismic activity, these earthquakes that are happening on a daily basis, sort of an unnerving experience. And I think visitors don't understand if that's the real threat that we are having in Hawaii volcanoes right now, is this ongoing seismicity and collapse at the summit.
There's another threat, if that's the word that we hear about, and I want to address this to both Will Okabe, Managing Director, and Jessica from the National Park Service, and that's the air quality threat, because as the winds shift, that becomes fog can become a serious problem, as I understand it. Is that right?
Sure, it is. It is absolutely correct. You know, we have the fog and the lays being produced down in the lower east rift zone, but then at the summit, you couple that with the volcanic emissions, and you add ash to the mix, and the air quality can be very, very challenging for those, especially those who have any kind of respiratory or heart issue to begin with. But then there's other days when the trade winds blow a lot of that out, and we don't see it at the summit necessarily, although the lower east rift communities certainly do. And I'll let Will address that part of it.
Well, there have been challenges for even the Volcano National Park because, you know, they're so close to Halemaumau. It's right there. So they know exactly, you know, the levels of SO2 or ash or all of that. So, they, you know, all these years of opening the national park, they lived with that particular type of situation on a daily basis. So, and they have times when it gets high. But when it becomes a safety issue, then the county government or government needs to react. So we have been having public meetings in all over the area, even in Kona, in regards to the SO2 or the the SO2 or ash or VOG public meetings. So in Pohoa alone, every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we have a public meeting for that particular area.
Well, it's my impression with this latest Pahoa event that there's more of an air quality issue than perhaps we've seen in the 30-plus years of this Kilauea eruptive phase. Is that accurate?
That is accurate because the fissure is right in Leilani. So, you know, we have monitors all over the place because we have a Pahoa High School. We have schools around that particular area as well, charter schools. So we monitor it on a very daily basis. And we only had to close school once because although it's high, the winds, as she mentioned, blows it out to the ocean, and we're always monitoring that situation. But when it becomes critical, when it becomes a safety hazard, then we need to alert the public and let the people that live in these areas that they need to evacuate. and that's exactly what we're doing. The best place to be is indoors. If you have air conditioning, if you're in a car, recycle the air. Those are the things that we are informing the public to do, not to be walking outside or doing any kind of strenuous activity outside when the levels of the SO2 or ash or even the ball conditions are high. But we try to alert the public as much as possible.
Thanks for that, Will.
And if you're just joining us, we're talking about Hawaii Island's recovery from ongoing volcanic activity around the Kilauea volcano, and we want to hear from listeners. The number to reach us is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 on the neighbor islands. Our guests are Will Okabe, who you just heard, the managing director for the County of Hawaii, and Jessica Farrakane, who's a spokesperson for Hawaii Volcanoes National Park on the Big Island.
Jessica, let me address this to you. One of the things that I'm sure you run into and volcanologists run into all the time is being asked what it is that can be predicted and what it is that cannot, because you can only go so far in terms of anticipating volcanic activity. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely accurate, and I think that probably the most common question we're getting now from visitors, the community, even our own staff is, what determines when it's safe to reopen the closed sections of the park? And when USGS advises that the event is over, which who knows when it will be over? Even they are not. Even the scientists don't predict what the volcano is going to do next. We are still going to have to conduct really comprehensive damage assessments and go in to see if places are safe. And then we're going to have to begin the process of cleaning up the whole summit area near Jagger Museum, which, by the way, has extreme damage to it. We removed artifacts from it yesterday and the day before. But the ash covering things, the cracks that are occurring in the roads, all of that has to be repaired. So it's very difficult to predict what the volcanoes are going to do next, and that makes it really hard to say when we'll be able to reopen some of these closed sections.
And Will Okabe, for you as county managing director and for your administration in general, the lack of ability to predict and the feeling that this hasn't ended and we don't really have an end in sight, that's got to be, among other things, a budgetary problem for the county.
Yes, it's very challenging. I know the other day, that the county was not able to pass the GET, and the GET was specifically was made from the legislature to address roads, transit, and that is a very a major concern for us, because in these areas that were affected, there are private roads because of their association in Leilani, in Kapo'o, and also in vacation land. So, we also have state roads that we're using, the chain of craters roads, goes into the national park. Mm-hmm. The state was able to redo that for the fifth time. They were able to repair that particular road in case Highway 130 to Kalapana is blocked off, so that people will be able to evacuate from that area. But the fiscal responsibility of the county is very great, and we're just fortunate that the governor was able to give us $12 million a couple weeks ago that will help with the first responders that are there manning these roadblocks and everything to ensure that people don't go in there when it's not safe. I know Sherry mentioned that the county, is looking for a site so that the public will be able to view the volcano or fissure 8 because it is a phenomenon. It is an attraction that people want to see, and it's not an everyday occurrence. Although it has been flowing for over 30 years, this is something people want to see. And we feel that as long as we can do it safely, as long as we can look at a plan to encourage that and to try to give the businesses here, whether it's the tour bus drivers or stimulate some type of economy, whether it's in Pahoa Town or around that area, we want to try to do that as quickly as possible.
Well, Will, I know that it's impossible to get real dollar damage estimates in an ongoing situation, but tourism, Hawaii Island tourism, has been hit by this, hasn't it?
Definitely. About 50% on the side of Kona, they're canceling reservations, their conventions, conferences. And I think we have to hold the national media concerned about that, because at one time they even said that Oahu is evacuating.
I know.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And Jessica, I want to bring you in on this because, you know, when I was talking about what people, the misconceptions people have about Volcano, I know I and an awful lot of my Oahu-dwelling friends got messages online saying, are you safe?
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't even begin to make sense if you know Hawaii at all. But it kind of shocked me that people could be that unaware of what it is. And Jessica, this isn't the kind of volcano that explodes, right? Could you explain that difference to me?
Well, I wouldn't say it doesn't explode.
Well, yeah.
We've had quite a few summit explosive events.
Yeah, I misspoke there.
That's okay.
But you know what I'm saying, right? This is not Mount St. Helens.
I do, right. Kilauea is a shield volcano as opposed to the type of cataclysmic volcano that would blow its top, say, like a Mount St. Helens or a Pinatubo in the Philippines.
But exactly.
Yes, I believe Don Swanson at USGS would definitely say that Kilauea has an explosive past.
Yeah.
And certainly an explosive current and future profile. But, you know, normally it's not the kind of volcano that explodes lava from its summit like a cataclysmic style volcano does. Mm-hmm. You are correct.
What's the physical difference between the shield and the pyroclastic? Is that the pyroclastic is the other kind, right?
Yeah, mostly it's a lot to do with the shape and then the way they erupt. The shield volcano will often erupt out of its flanks, like Kilauea is doing exactly right now in the lower east rift zone. So instead of just having one area where the pressure builds up and blasts out, you have these fissure eruptions out on the flanks and or up at the summit, was happening prior to these events. You know, it's really fascinating what is going on at the summit of Kilauea right now. We've had Halemaumau double in size over the last few weeks and go down to 1,000 feet. There's part of the crater floor now that's 1,000 feet below where it was. I mean, that is just jaw dropping as the bottom drops out literally. And yesterday I was looking at photos on USGS. There's a helicopter aerial that shows Crater Rim Drive, the closed part. It had been closed since 08 because mm-hmm. of the volcanic emissions. Fell into the crater 2 days ago. The parking lot, the former parking lot, Halemaumau, is in the crater now. So the changes up in the summit are dramatic. Not everybody can see that, of course, because that part of the park is closed. But the aerials that we're able to see, it's just amazing. The damage that has been inflicted up there, too, when you say it's not an explosive volcano, but the seismic repercussions are amazing up there, just devastating to the infrastructure. We on a daily basis, we're having activity that continues to degrade the park buildings and infrastructure, especially near the summit. As I mentioned previously, our cultural resources staff removed the day before yesterday, paintings by Herb Kawanui Kane of Pele, lots of cultural artifacts that were in Jagger Museum.
Yeah.
That building was built back in 1927, so it has sustained quite a bit of damage. We're literally watching Jagger Museum and USGS's Hawaiian Volcano Observatory slip into the crater.
Oh, boy.
You know, I really doubt, and most of the park management really doubts we will ever use those buildings again.
Oh, that's sad, Jessica.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's not unusual. I mean, it is unusual. I shouldn't say it that way, but Kilauea is doing what Kilauea does.
It's what volcanoes do, right?
Yes, and this is a sacred area. This whole area, the Ue Kahuna, the cliff areas surrounding the caldera and close to Halemaumau, these are considered wahipana, or very sacred areas to Native Hawaiians. And you had buildings right there on the edge that were built, a long while back when the activity was certainly different. But, it's changing daily. When the park reopens, and again, we don't know when that will be, it will be very different, and it will be an honor to share that with people and share these changes in this amazing activity.
Jessica, we have a caller on the line who has a question that I think we might want to send your way. This is Laura from Makiki. Laura?
Hi.
Hi.
The Fisher 8, two questions. When will it be considered a pu'u? And second question, what will be its name?
Hi. This is Jessica, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. I can't answer that question because, one, Fissure 8 is outside of the national park boundary, and, two, that is really a question better slated for the USGS scientists as far as when it's going to be, you know, considered a cone or another volcano itself.
On the county side, we are, you know, looking at possible names. But, you know, it has to be a cultural, looking at cultural advisors to really look into that before we decide to name that particular fissure. I mean, I know we always mention Fissure 8, but people would identify more of a Hawaiian name to recognize that particular area. But it's still a little too early for us to do that. But we are at the county level trying to address that those requests or concerns.
Will, the front page of the Star Advertiser today has a story that says the County of Hawaii is exploring a possible viewing area for visitors and residents to observe Fissure 8 and some of the destruction that's occurred down there. Could you tell us a little bit about that plan?
Yes, we have our research and development committee looking into that and trying to identify sites to see how we can find the best possible site for our viewers. We're looking at trying to work with private companies as well, because they won't be able to just drive up to that particular area. It will just cause just too much traffic. It'll probably be like a red hill at the peak traffic time.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that size of roads in this particular area. But we are trying to identify an area for the viewing, and hopefully that we will be able to give an opportunity for not only for the local people, but people from all over the world to be able to view this natural phenomenon. And I think that's something that everybody wants to see. I mean, we've been having thousands of people come in on a daily basis down when it was in Kalapana, and we have to try to look at that opportunity. But the county, definitely before we do something like that, we're going to make sure that it's safe. We're going to have every contingency plan made so that we can, in case there was an emergency or wind shifting or things like that, that there will be an evacuation route. So we are looking at plans to do that.
And Will, is the hope that that will help stimulate some economic activity in the area? We know it's been hit pretty hard since the volcanic activity began about 2 months ago.
Definitely. It will bring back, because even, you know, the national park, of course, is closed, but we have a lot of people that are losing their jobs. I mean, in the basic community down in the Pahoa area, we have restaurants and we have businesses, and people are not going down there. But we want to assure the public that this will be something that will be something that the whole world would understand, that we're open for business. And once we start to do that, it will stimulate the economy. They'll understand that it's safe to come to the Big Island or also to come to Hawaii. And that's basically the message. And we're going to try to make this work. I know the Mayor Kim really wants to develop this program into a positive one. We might have to look at trying to get cultural people or even a national park to try to assist us in some way of how we can do this. But it's going to take a team effort, not only from the state, but from the federal government, in trying to look at a way to make this thing happen.
Well, you know, Will, you just reminded me of something. We had a discussion on this program within the last couple of weeks about visitor attraction in Hawaii when too many people start coming, and that creates, you know, infrastructure problems, problems of roadways. And you've lost some roadways in the Pahoa area, right?
Exactly. I mean, we've lost a lot of roads. You know, imagine this now. I mean, when the lava goes, whether it's Pahoehoe or A'a,
right?
Now the certain places when it was your property, now it's sometimes it's 25, 30 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a concern. So for us to get into those roads or try to make a road, now we have to chip away or try to build over that particular lava. So that is definitely a concern.
And Jessica, you know, just in terms of the volcano as a visitor attraction, which you deal with as a from the National Park Service perspective, there's only so many cars that you can get up to that area, right?
Well, you know, during the park's normal opening, you can we saw upwards of 5,000 to 8,000 visitors a day, depending on what Kilauea was doing. Highway 11, you know, sometimes visitors would be lined up outside of the entrance station, and so Highway 11 would be impacted by that, but it was never anything that we couldn't manage at the park level.
Mm-hmm.
Now that lava is impacting Highway 130 and the lower communities in Puna, we've worked with the County of Hawaii and the state in reestablishing Chain of Craters Road, like Will mentioned, at the coastal level as an evacuation route. And that would be a one-way evacuation route, not a regular thoroughfare in and out of the park, but just a way to get residents out of danger zone. And then also the park has worked with the community in Volcano Village and the Volcano Winery in particular to establish an evacuation route up here at the summit should the village need to leave and they could not access Highway 11 because of continued cracking. So
mm-hmm.
We've worked on two different evacuation routes in the community as well.
Well, you also, if, you know, plans continue to allow visitor access to the spectacular viewing sites at the volcano, there's going to have to be some attention paid to getting those people in and out, right?
Well, if you're talking about what's going on in the summit into the closed areas, once we were able to reopen, that wouldn't be any different, I don't think, than how people access the park now, which is Highway 11.
Mm-hmm.
That so far has not been terribly impacted. We had some cracking on the highway in early May due to earthquake activity, but that was all surface level. So I'm not quite sure what you mean.
Just that you're going to, you know, have a lot more people coming up to an area that has lost some roadways.
That's more outside of the park, I believe, where the roadways are impacted.
Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking about.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about Hawaii Island's recovery from ongoing volcanic activity around Kilauea, and we'd like to hear what you think. Our guests are Will Okabe, the Managing Director for the County of Hawaii, and Jessica Farrakane from the Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 941-3689 from Oahu or 877-941-3689 from anywhere else.
And Will Okabe, it's very much your kuleana as managing director for the county to worry about what things are going to cost, right? And you mentioned that you folks had wanted to do a general excise tax increase. What was it that you were seeking?
Originally, the legislature put in a request for the counties to look into a 0.5% excise tax to go for mass transit and roads.
Right.
And transportation. That was it. So that was the measure for to address all of the roads within the on the Big Island. Because as I mentioned to you, our island is so big that we have more roads than in any of the all the islands compared. So you know we had we have a situation that we're not able to address every road from Kona all the way to the Puna area. So this will give you an opportunity to do that. But this was before the lava.
Right.
And now that this thing has happened, now it has compounded this situation much, much more. So well, it was a wave that the legislature did because what had happened was, if you remember, the TAT, the Transit Accommodation Tax, was now going to be focused on building your rail on the Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
So that took away a lot of the revenues that we had anticipated for all of the counties. So because of that, we had to increase property tax. We had to increase the fuel tax. And now this lava thing happened. The legislature wanted to put in this bill for this GET tax. So...
Well, it would seem, you know, and help me understand this, Will. It's my understanding that county's share of the transit accommodations tax has been capped, right?
Yes, yes.
So there isn't a provision in the current distribution of funds from the transit accommodation tax. There isn't any kind of emergency provision for what happens if something catastrophic like this that has happened to you folks.
That is correct. I mean, there is no provisions for that. So basically, the majority of the money is going to pay for your rail. And, you know, the original intent of the transit and accommodation tax was to assist the counties, because all the counties in the state of Hawaii provides the opportunity for people that are visiting the islands, whether it's the public facilities, whether it's the roads, park and recreation facilities, the lifeguards, all of these essential services to provide that the safety of the tourists that are coming in. That was the intent of that particular tax. If you look at the law,
yeah, I know.
That was the intent. So when they changed that and all of a sudden they started to pay for other things on Oahu, whether it's the Turtle Bay and all these other things, the Blaisdell the Center, all these other things, it kind of went away from the intent of that particular law. So another concern for us in the counties, all the counties, that you're going to have a constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment that's going to come up in this next election cycle is going to take away some money from the property tax to go to basically the teachers, and that's going to be for the constitution. So 75% of the county's revenue come from property taxes. So that's also going to impact the county's revenue as well. So
well,
very concerned about that as well.
Well, my understanding of that, your share of the transit accommodations tax, is that not only that the county share has been capped, but it has been capped in perpetuity, meaning there really is no recourse. You can't go to the state and say, we need more because we've had an emergency.
Exactly. It would have to be, again, another legislative bill to release that particular cap.
What's your chosen solution, Will?
Well, I would really like to see that the intent of the law be intact as the legislature starts to look at the intent of the law to try to give that opportunity for us. Because we all belong, the state of Hawaii, we belong to the same team, the same family. Whether you take away the TAT, then what the counties need to do is they need to get revenue, so they're going to start to increase the taxes on property tax or fuel tax or weight tax in their specific counties. But still, they're the same people that we're taxing. It just puts the burden now on specific island. What happened in Kauai was able to pass the 0.5% excise tax, but that's a very small island. On Maui, they didn't do it, but their budget is $900 million. For us, it's $515 million. But the enormous size of our island, with 200,000 residents on this island, you know, we're in desperate need for some revenue. So with this lava, it's definitely going to affect the property taxes, because now we have the communities in the Pahoa area, in the Puna area, is we're not going to be able to collect any property tax, because now the value is zero. So that's going to compound issues. And we're just finding a way, trying to find a way. If the governor didn't give us that $12 million to assist us in the first responders and overtime and all of the necessary needs to create some relief for the people in Puna, we would have been much worse shape than we are now.
We've got State Senator Russell Ruderman from the Big Island on the phone right now. Senator, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. You were kind of spearheading the effort to do a land swap for residents of Puna that have lost their homes or properties. Can you tell us a little bit about your effort?
Sure. I'm trying to propose that we use some unused state land to provide a relocation place for people to move so they don't move back and be tempted to rebuild in the same areas. There's a state law that allows for this, and it has been done a couple of times in the past, including the tsunami in 1960 in Hilo. So we've identified some state land that's in Lava Zone 3 that is not in Lava Zones 1 and 2 that could potentially be used for what I call a relocation village. So that if you lost a home or some property in the lava inundation, you could trade that essentially for a lot in this new village. It's one of several options that we're considering for how we might relocate people.
Senator, do you think that is that a sustainable solution long term? I mean, if something like this disaster happens again, are you going to be able to relocate people in whatever community is affected 10 years from now or 20 years from now? I mean, as Jessica Farrakhan mentioned earlier, we don't know when this will stop, and all indicators are that it will happen again at some point in the future.
Well, is it sustainable? I mean, I think we're already looking at relocating most of the people in that threatened area. And, my proposal allows for incremental expansion of this based on how great the need is, because we don't know right now how many people will need to be relocated. But there's very large parcels of land, and we could relocate a lot of folks into an area that's not as much a lava hazard.
Who owns those parcels, Senator?
DLNR. It's state land under control of DLNR. It is not Hawaiian homeland. It's not crown or ceded lands. It's state land.
Presumably available.
Very unused.
Available and unused, as you're describing it.
That's correct. And there's very little native habitat on it. I would not, want to sacrifice native forest. That's not an issue here. It has access to highway, electricity, and water, and would potentially be a good relocation place.
Senator, thanks very much for calling in. We're only a couple minutes from the conclusion of our program.
I understand.
We've got a couple people on the line along with you, Senator. Will Okabe is the managing director for the County of Hawaii, and Jessica Farrakhan from the National Park Service at Volcanoes National Park. Given we've got a couple of minutes left, Will, from the county perspective, any final thoughts?
Well, the county is doing everything we can, but we all know that the county can't do it alone. We appreciate the support that we're getting from the state of Hawaii. People are donating a lot of money and also, just supplies so that we can help the people that have been displaced. And we appreciate that. But it's going to take a team effort. It's going to take a team effort in regards to the state and federal government to really try to make this thing work. And we're going to do everything that we can. The mayor has made a commitment that we're going to do everything we can for the people in Puna, and not neglecting all the rest of the services that we provide on this island. But that's what government does. We try to give the best opportunity to help people, and that's what we're going to do.
Thanks very much, Will. Jessica from the National Park Service.
Yes, just a reminder that even though the summit area of the park is closed, you can continue to experience Hawaii Volcanoes National Park from Kau to Volcano to Hilo, and you can visit the park website at nps.gov/Hawaii Volcanoes to find out what's going on and when. And we really thank the community and our visitors for continuing to support and understand the changes that we are going through. We look forward to welcoming you back sooner rather than later.
Thanks very much for that, Jessica, and thanks for taking part in that program.
Thank you for having us.
Senator Ruderman, are you still on the line? Any quick final thoughts?
Yeah, still here. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for joining us. And we'd also like to thank our guests and our HPR contributing reporter, Sherry Bracken. Our guests on this program have been Will Okabe, Managing Director for the County of Hawaii, Jessica Farrakhan of the National Park Service on Hawaii Island.
And thanks to everyone out there listening. We'll be right back after a short break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Harbor Restaurant at Pier 38, featuring Mediterranean cuisine and the Copper Top Bar with Harbor Views, offering private event dining options and on-site parking. HarborPier38.com.
If you're hiring in the Me Too era, you can't just call people's references, you know.
We're rather calling former employers, talking to colleagues, coworkers, supervisors, people that they wouldn't necessarily have listed, to understand what the day-to-day working relationship was like with that individual.
I'm Kai Rizdal. How not to hire harassers, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6.
And that's it for today's edition of The Conversation. We thank our on-air guests. And if you're called in, make it on the air, you can reach us at 808-792-8217.
You can also send us an email. The address to do that is talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. That's all spelled out. And if you want to catch this show or listen back to any other one we've put on the air, go to hawaiipublicradio.org and check out the Conversation podcast. I'm Ryan Finnerty in for Catherine Cruz.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.